KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
On last Monday's News In Depth, we previewed the Portland Book Festival, which is coming up this year on Saturday, November 9th. And the week before that, we focused on the 10th anniversary of the Portland Fermentation Festival, another annual event that's unique to our city. On today's in-depth segment, we put it all together, books and food, with guests from the panel, Home Cooking, New Classic Cookbooks, taking place at this year's Portland Book Festival. Our good friend and panel moderator, Liz Crane, is here, live with us in the KBOO studios, along with the panelists, Portland residents Megan Scott and John Becker, and joining us by phone from the Bay Area, Andrea Nguyen. Liz is co-founder of the Portland Fermentation Festival and author of The Food Lover's Guide to Portland, Hello, My Name is Tasty, the Toro Bravo Cookbook, and the forthcoming Dumplings Equal Love. Megan and John are co-authors of the latest edition of one of the best-selling cookbooks of all time, The Joy of Cooking, and Andrea's author of six cookbooks, including her most recent work, Vietnamese Food Any Day. Liz, Megan, John, and Andrea, thanks so much for joining us at KBOO this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Liz, let's start off with you. You were at the Portland Book Festival last year for a KBOO Between the Covers interview with chef and restaurant owner Edward Lee, and that was focused on his book, Buttermilk Graffiti. What gave you the idea for the classic cookbook session at this year's festival? How'd you go about recruiting such an incredible panel?
Well, I'd like to take credit for that. I am on the Portland Book Festival Advisory Council, so I do get to give a lot of ideas and feedback and be a part of the conversation. But this was all Amanda Bullock, who's the festival.
We had her on last week, yes.
That's right, yeah. So she is a cookbook lover and knew that had met Megan and John and thought, oh, well, this is just a perfect combination to have all of these great authors together on the stage talking about their new books.
So, John, let's get to the new book, the latest edition, going back to 1931. And it was actually self-published by your great-grandmother, Irma Rombauer. And it's always been a family affair with your grandmother, Marion Rombauer Becker, and your father, Ethan Becker, both revising and updating that original volume. Now, you started out as a literary scholar, which is interesting to me, specializing in James Joyce, I guess.
If one can specialize, yeah.
Yes. And so was the food part, that family legacy, something you initially resisted or embraced?
I was always just, I was told to, you know, kind of follow my muse, if you will. But I came around and decided I finally had something to offer the family business. And, you know, that's pretty much what set me on this path.
And I think cooks all over the world are grateful to you for doing that, continuing the tradition. And Megan, the latest edition, so I think the last one was 2006.
That's right.
So this is a huge update, and it's been a project of both of yours for the past 10 years. There are currently, I read, 20 million copies of the previous edition in print. What were your priorities in updating the book, the previous edition?
Well, as boring as it might sound, we just wanted to make everything better. We wanted to make sure it was comprehensive. We wanted to make sure the information that we provided was correct. So we did a ton of fact-checking and research, a ton of recipe testing, and thinking of what recipes are we missing that we feel like home cooks need to have. So it was a very thoughtful time where we just took a lot of time to really do a big outline of what we wanted to do. And then once we had that outline, we went forward with the revision.
And do you know, you must know, how many recipes are actually in the book, the number?
About 2,500.
Incredible.
The publisher likes to inflate that number, but it's about 2,500.
Did you...
You count substitutions and optional ingredients and variations and stuff. And
did you test each one then, making them again from the recipe that was in that last edition, the previous edition?
That's how we started, yeah. I think before we actually signed a contract for this new edition, we had tested over 1,500 recipes and created genealogies of each one to see which edition they were added and how they changed. So, yeah, it was a pretty big research project.
Like, it's easy to see why it took 10 years.
Yeah.
Now, you both live in Portland, and I know, no doubt, as all of us are aware of our own foodie scene here, and that caters to a variety of diets. I know because I go out with friends who have all sorts of diets and have to be very specific when they order from a restaurant. But vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free dishes, pretty much anything with kale in it, I think we're the world capital of that. They're all well represented in the new edition, and these were like new recipes that you added?
Yeah, a lot of them are new recipes. I mean, I think people underestimate Joy of Cooking as a source for vegan and vegetarian recipes, but there were already hundreds, and we've added a lot more.
How did you go about adding them? Are these all ones that you created yourself then, or got from friends and relatives and collected from people all over?
Yeah, they are. There are some of them are recipes that John and I just really like to make at home. Some of them are things that we have cooked for each other over the years. Others are things that, for example, my grandmother and great-grandmother cooked. So I took some of their recipes and put them in the book. And others were just things that we felt were missing that we developed recipes for.
Now, there's a new addition to the book, and I think Liz must be very excited about this. This is an entire section on fermented foods.
Yes, we added a section on fermentation, which is totally new. Joy of Cooking has had a sauerkraut recipe since, I think, the 70s.
At least the 70s.
But there was no explanation of what the process of fermentation is, and that was the only recipe. So we've added more recipes and also, how does fermentation work? How do I know if this fermented thing is good or if it's terrible? Because I think most people don't have a lot of cooking experience with projects that are up in the air. Like when you ferment something, it's not like cooking a stew. It doesn't exactly follow one step after the other. So it's a little bit of intuition and thinking like, okay, I think this is ready. It tastes right. So we try to provide more guidance on fermentation.
Now, we had Liz and her co-founders of the Portland Fermentation Festival on, and they were nice enough to bring in a whole plate of samples. So we were talking, in fact, before the interview about the fermented garlic and fermented honey, and there was also natto, which is a Japanese fermented soybean, and a number of other foods, cheeses, of course, and then Liz brought in some wine, which is fermented. So can you name some of the new recipes in the fermented section in Joy of Cooking?
Well, we have a half sour pickle recipe. Of course, the sauerkraut and kimchi. What else do we have?
Salt preserved lemons.
That's right.
Trying to think. Oh, a fermented jardiniera. I mean, that's not like a traditional way to make it, but that's
we did that.
Kind of a special project of ours. A fermented hot sauce as well, kind of a Louisiana style hot sauce.
Yeah. And tofu misozuke, which is kind of like a tofu cheese. It's very delicious.
Now, as you went over the recipes, and you mentioned trying out at least 1,500 during the process and maybe more as you got going, were there any that you actually took out, or is everything in those previous editions still in the latest edition?
Definitely had to take some out in order to make room for all of this new material.
Have been difficult, John.
It was painful. But, if we got into a corner with something, we were like, we're really just not sure, then, my father, Ethan, was always, willing to lend a hand and tell us if we were, desecrating some treasured family recipe.
So what were the criteria for taking one out? I know your dad probably had the final say important input.
I think it was more intuition than anything else. It's hard to really put your finger on when a recipe is out of date. What's the turning point, I guess, for a recipe? But it's like one of those things, it when you see it, like, maybe it's time for this to go. But, we would definitely try to, if we were on the fence about it, of course, Ethan was a good resource. And then, we would try to determine the popularity of something by using a variety of searches and...
Internet searches?
Well, Google Trends or Google Ngrams. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it shows you the incidence of a word in, Google Books. So you can type in phrases and kind of get it's probably a distorted sense of the popularity of a dish, but it's at least something to go on.
Mm-hmm. Now, Andrea, we have you on the phone, and you're calling in from the Bay Area?
Correct.
Oh, and first I should ask how you're doing. I know you were in a fire zone there, and on email you said that you were safe, but there might still be some planned power outages and things. So hopefully things are going much better and things are recovering.
Yes, well, we had our bouts of during the power outages, but I'm happy to report that I can talk to you right now. Clearly, because there's power.
Just in time. And you'll be up here on Friday for the panel on Saturday. Now, you're a professional food writer and educator, and you've written 5 previous cookbooks focusing on Asian dishes, so banh mi, dumplings, tofu, and pho. What's the focus of Vietnamese food any day?
Well, this is a book that I've been wanting to write for a very long time, and the purpose for Vietnamese Food Any Day is to really get people across the board to make Vietnamese food whenever they want to. So not just on the weekend as a project, and certainly the book is not an everyday book because that would be a lie. I don't want people to make Vietnamese food every day because that's not how I eat and cook either. But the book is empowering. There is no Asian market shopping required. All the ingredients came from American grocery stores, and you know, the gist of the book is to really get people to work Vietnamese food into their lives. And so, you know, seeing the new edition of The Joy of Cooking, there are Vietnamese recipes in there. There's a pho recipe in there. There's a banh mi recipe in there. There's a nook cham recipe in there. And along with all the other Asian dishes, you know, these are gateway foods for people to explore deeper. And I'm just so delighted that the cuisines of Asia are well represented in The Joy of Cooking. And I look forward to, you know, the conversation next Saturday.
Now, you mentioned these are ingredients you can buy at kind of your generic market. You're talking about like the Albertsons, the Safeways of the world?
Correct.
Okay, because I live about 15 miles southwest of here, and we're fortunate. Actually, Beaverton area is about 40% immigrant. We have several Asian markets, Uwajamaya, 99 Ranch, things like that. So the 80 recipes in your book don't require any of those specialty ingredients.
They don't. You don't need a wok. You don't need a Chinese steamer, too. And there's no deep frying required. As much as we love deep fried foods, we don't want to make it at home. And that's the reality. I've taught people how to cook for a long time. And the thing is that I've traveled the country taking a look at ingredients, what's available. And in a place like Beaverton and Portland, there are remarkable, remarkable Asian markets that people go to. But, you know, like even with Asian people that I talk to, you know, first, second generation professionals, they say to me, you know, I don't want to go to an Asian market all the time. And for me to make a book that requires a lot of Asian market shopping, I believe, frankly, just keeps the cuisine in a sort of a specialized, ghettoized position, and it really deserves a bigger place at the American table.
Now, that's a good segue into my next question. Last year, I mentioned Liz interviewed Edward Lee, and he went around the country, and he went to a lot of immigrant communities and studied their food. And one of the topics, Liz, that you discussed with him, and I want your take on this, Andrea, is he hated the word authentic when applied to food and recipes. He said that we're spoiled in the U.S. in a good way to have so many influences from other cultures, and that food evolves based on these interactions between the cultures. There are a million variations, he said, and no one authentic version. Would you agree when that comes to the Vietnamese food?
Oh, it just applies to every cuisine across the board. You know, authenticity leaves the moment that it leaves someone's hands, to tell you the truth, because authenticity, especially with regard to Vietnamese food, changes constantly. And with Vietnamese Food Any Day, you know, people who've been skeptical about being able to cook Vietnamese food without going to the American supermarket, without going to an Asian market, have said, oh, this isn't authentic enough. And I'm like, well, why don't you tell my 85-year-old mother that? She shops at American supermarkets all the time. And the thing is that, you know, I measure authenticity not by something that is removed, that's set in Vietnam. I measure it in terms of skill and craft and intention. And in Vietnamese, we have this term called kheo. And someone who is kheo is talented. They are clever. They're ingenious in a certain regard. And they prepare things with thought and care. And cooking well requires that you have, you know, grounded knowledge, and you also have thoughtful intentions to produce something, to put ingredients, textures together, so that you make a cohesive, delicious dish. And I think that is authenticity, because that talks about the soul of the cook and how the soul of the cook and the cuisine can be brought about on, you know, through a dish. And that for me is what authenticity is. So it's moving, it's very flexible, elastic. And I think we should talk about it that way in a very, you know, complex manner, not just by saying, ah, you know, it's inauthentic because it's not being made by a Vietnamese person. And you know what? Just because you're Vietnamese doesn't mean you can make Vietnamese food. I can prove it because my sister, who's a high-level attorney, she can barely boil water.
Well, Andrea, that's a beautiful answer, and I look forward to the session, the panel, on Saturday. Liz, Megan, John, and Andrea, again, many thanks for taking time out to join us at KBOO this evening.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Liz Crane, Megan Scott, John Becker, and Andrea Nguyen, who will all be at the Saturday Portland Book Festival cookbook panel. Megan and John will be talking about the latest edition of the venerable Joy of Cooking, which comes out November 12th. And Andrea will be talking about her book, Vietnamese Food Any Day, which is available now. The session runs from 3:30 to 4:30 Saturday afternoon at the Portland Art Museum's Miller Gallery. Megan and John will also be appearing at Powell City of Books on Sunday, December 8th at 7:30. You can pick up a signed copy of the latest edition of Joy of Cooking there. And you can find out more about the cookbook panel and the festival on the Literary Arts website, literary-arts.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News In Depth.